Open the Senate Revenue Committee for Wednesday, July 9th. Welcome two new members for this bill, Senator Metzger and Senator Nelson. Our committee party is this evening, so you are...
Oh, nice going. Sure. Yeah. Put them on the committee now.
Committee, you can...
When and where?
For you, it's at Magoo's.
Yeah.
5:30.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2041. Members, my intention on this would be for today and would ask folks who have amendments, and we're going to hear from our Ways and Means sub momentarily, but for others who have amendments to this bill, would like to hear those today and through Friday and have a full discussion between now and Friday and come back to this bill early next week if possible and if we can reach agreement on it. With that, I will bring up Senator George, Senator Morse, Senator Dukes, and Senator Carter. Just pull up.
Margaret, you just break your way right in there. Yeah, but we know who's running this show, so get over here.
Yeah. Mr. No New Taxes is running the show. Go for it.
We're very honored to have the full joint or sub of Ways and Means. So thank you very much for coming this morning.
Mr. Chairman, would you sequester the one senator on the left, the right of you over there? Because we wouldn't come here for antagonism.
I would ask that questions go through the chair and comments go through the chair.
Mr. Chair, at her age, I will not speak directly to her. I promise.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Senator Dukes?
Oh, I thought Senator Morris.
See, we can't agree to anything in that committee.
But we agreed on this. Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Joan Dukes, State Senator for District 16. Committee members, it's good to be here, and we sort of did an informal poll before we got here and decided that the senator to my right, your left, is going to start us off. But we, as having to admit at least some responsibility for the fact that this bill has bounced back into your committee, thought we would come here and tell you about our concerns.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Frank Morris. I represent District 8, which is the Albany-Corvallis area of Linn and Benton counties. I would like to speak to the bill from the perspective of a member of the industry that is actually a beneficiary of this bill. I think I probably recognize as much or more than any member in this assembly the importance of what this bill does for our state and the opportunities it provides to get our economy moving. But I had, when the full understanding of this bill came to us and some of the issues surrounding it in our Ways and Means, I spoke with equal passion against the sequestration portion of the bill as equal to the passion that I have in support of the bill. We do need this bill. But the sequestration portion of the bill is not what we should be doing at this time. And let me explain. If you look at the growth of revenue in this state starting in 1989 and bringing that forward, by any measure, the 90s was an outlier in terms of revenue that collected. The growth of capital gains, as you all know, is not sustainable. And what we have is we have an obligation to fund what I consider to be signal events in this state. We have Measure 5. We're facing a responsibility to the general fund that did not exist prior to 1989 and then as it rolled out in the early 90s to the tune of approximately $3 billion of new monies and obligations to this state. You have Measure 11, new obligations that did not exist with any funding source of $135 million. We have the Oregon Health Plan, which no one in this assembly is willing to make major wholesale changes and reductions. That's an expenditure of approximately $1 billion. You add to that the Measure 88, which, of course, is subject to change by the Assembly, and Measure 99, the Home Care Commission. That is in ahead of us, mostly. It was not in our budget. The governor dropped $25 or $24 million, but that will roll up, colleagues, to approximately $200 million that's facing us in the future. We have obligations that we cannot fund given our current revenue right now. And so that's what struck my chord with a great deal of passion in terms of sequestering future income tax revenue in this bill. We don't have that revenue. And even with the revenue that comes forward by personal income and corporate income taxes as a result of this bill, we are short. We do not have the funds to do it. So my request, and I think it's the request of the Ways and Means Subcommittee, is that the sequestration portion of the bill be amended out. We recognize that it's a political process, that stakeholders have come to the table and crafted this agreement that is now before us. And if there is an adjustment that needs to be made to make equity and fairness, that it be done proportional to the amount of the tax credit. For example, whatever that amount is, that specifically with respect to the truckers, that is a credit, that it be adjusted only in the amount of the credit, proportional to that credit, and not carry it forward as a fee reduction, which reduces the total bonding capacity of the bill far in excess of any proportional sense of that tax credit. So my concern is, as a member of this assembly, is that to add additional burdens to our general fund at this point in time is not wise, because we do not have the source of funds to pay for what we're obligated to pay for right now. And in fact, if you look at how we're going to get out of this building, we all know that we're going to go after one-time revenues, probably close to $1 billion of monies that are one-time. And we have ongoing expenses, and we're going to have some new revenue. But this is not the time to add burdens to our general fund obligations. So I thank you for this opportunity, and I'd like to express appreciation for Senator Starr and Senator Metzger's willingness to bring this back and re-refer it for further consideration. Sincerely do appreciate that.
Thank you.
They're looking to me. I'll go next. Let me give you a little history of what happened last week relative to this committee. And the Committee on Ways and Means was Subcommittee of Transportation Economic Development. We're to look at, we're to, going to be considering the bill that actually, I am so sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, State Senator Gary George, representing District 12. Back to the story. So we were going to be looking at a bill in the Ways and Means Committee, because this whole process has bypassed Ways and Means, but it was going to be the corrective bill to enable some of the things to happen. Serious concern did arise over the sequestering. What happened, though, was in a discussion informally amongst the members of the committee, it came to be known that not a single person understood what had happened here relative to the sequestering dollars. And the concern, of course, was at that time we were looking at an income tax gap for the 03-05 of $9.1 million, and for the 05-07 of $22.2 million, hole in the general fund. And, of course, we've been assigned the responsibility to look for general fund dollars in all of the budgets we have before us in order to move them back over for a K-12, for the university system, for seniors, for disabled, those kind of efforts. So here we were looking for dollars, a general fund, that might be able to be shifted over to backfill some of the shortfalls we have in other programs, only to find out that this one was going to be 9.1 and 22.2 million shortfall in the general fund. That caused a lot of angst. The other thing that bothered me was I just don't like bills that are done in the dead of night when people don't understand what is happening. I've asked House members, those who voted for and those who voted against, including this morning with one of my committee members, did you have any idea what was in that bill? Did you know about this general fund cost? Answer, no. Had no idea about that cost. Now, we all understand the deals get made, bills have momentum, but we are the process. That process is fine that that occurred. We all know it occurs out there. It's outside of the legislative normal process, but it's our responsibility to make sure that there's a proper hearing for one of the, for any bill. And that certainly includes 2041B. I have a letter here from the Oregon Highway Users Alliance saying that this bill should be passed without additional amendments. Well, that's great. They have a right to say that, and we have everyone from ODOT and the Federal Highway Administration, AAA, Farm Bureau, Forest Industries. We have all these folks advocating, you know, for a substantial tax increase, same time telling us not to have even consideration of supporting or continuing not to harm the general fund, because, I mean, we have a deficit in the area of total amount of revenue we were expecting in the general fund. So I urge each one of you to look at this bill carefully, make sure you understand what exactly it's doing. I think if you do that, you're going to come to the conclusion that, in fact, it needs to be amended. And this group has proposed amendments that, as Senator Dukes described, will, in fact, remove this sequestering out of the bill.
Are those amendments still in council? Or
yes.
They're still in council?
Mr. Chair, committee members, Joan Dukes again. We have requested that amendments be drafted to remove the sequestering section of this bill. You've heard a good discussion of how we actually found out it was in there and how we, and you would not have appreciated having been in the room when we got the word that this sequestration, the way it's written in your bill currently, is a $4 million hit to this current biennium, because the expectation is that the tax credit will arrive before the income tax money arrives. And as Senator George said, we're down there at the end of the hallway where not too many people get to visit us, unfortunately, and we're pulling your favorite programs out of budgets. And we are instructed by the co-chairs to reduce general fund in every budget we find, and in fact to reduce other funds if there isn't any general fund there. So we're doing the cutting to try to balance this budget with the least amount of tax increase possible to the general fund, and then we trip across a bill that sort of shovels $4 million out the back door, is the way I would explain it, and is trying to do it very quietly. And we cried foul very quickly. First off, I think the bill should have been in Ways and Means, but it wasn't. And so here we are in Revenue Committee explaining to you that if you would like to go ahead and raise an additional $4 million for this, I guess that would be okay. But let's not take the $4 million away from the existing. Now, rumors in this building are cheap, and there are lots of them at any given time, but in the last 24 hours, I've heard a lot of people who are nervous because they're being told that if you take the sequestration piece out, that you must also take some of the fees out. And the truth is you can remove sequestration as a separate standalone part and still have a cost-responsible package. And your constitutional obligation is to cost responsibility. That is that light cars and vehicles like most of us drive, and the heavier vehicles, as two of our colleagues here have driven from time to time, paid their proportionate share to the damage that they do to the highway system. That it does not include general fund, has never included general fund, legally does not include general fund. So we're talking all of the taxes associated with those other two vehicles. Everything from gas tax to vehicle registration to weight mile tax and all of those things. So that's what has to be balanced according to the damage they do to the road. And my understanding is that those things in the bill are balanced, very carefully balanced. They always are when we bring a package like this forward. But then the general fund piece was added. It is my belief, and I am working along with Senator Carter on some of this, that the mass transit piece, and or at least part of it, and at least part of the transportation demand study can be handled in another method with non-general fund, in another bill, in another way. And we are working with folks to try to accomplish that. So that's $4 million a biennium right out of that piece. And then you are left with a tax credit for trucks and engines that doesn't even take, I mean, supposedly it's, we call it a green tax because we want to get more efficient trucks and engines on the road, but it doesn't remove the less efficient ones. You can sell those to the neighbor and they can keep going. So there's, it's sort of a moot point as to whether or not we've improved the environment, but it is in fact the case that we have are handing away general funds to do it. So we're here to plead with you because we're tired of cutting. That's not to say we're going to quit cutting. We're going to continue cutting. But please don't make those cuts worse by what you do here. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Corcoran.
I have a couple questions, Senator Dukes. One is you've alleged that there's already a highway, a road determined to be built in Washington County with this money, and I'd like you to expand on that rumor. And the other question is, I haven't heard any of the three of you talk about what road projects or bridge projects you're willing not to fund because of removing the sequestering.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, the sequestering does nothing for roads and bridges. It has nothing to do with roads and bridges. It's a $5 million a year general fund piece that does three things. It funds mass transit buses. Of where they go, I'm not sure how that's determined, but that's what it funds. It funds a transportation demand study, which has been described to me as basically an advertising campaign to try to convince people, I assume in the urban areas, because we don't have a lot of mass transit in my district, but to convince them to get out of their automobiles and into alternative modes of transportation. And it gives a tax credit to people who buy semis that have the newer type of engine in them or replace a current engine with a green engine, a less polluting engine. So it has nothing to do with repairing or building or maintaining roads and bridges. It is an entirely separate section.
And Washington County,
and I don't have any problem. I attended a Washington County delegation meeting because I am a Washington County legislator. And at that caucus meeting, I was told that there was a bridge in this bill. I mean, not a bridge, excuse me, a road. Not being as familiar with the more urban parts of Washington County, I can't tell you, although there are others here who were at that same meeting, can perhaps tell you which highway it was, but that it was in the bill. Not specifically by name, mind you, but that there was an agreement that if this bill passed, that road would be built. I will tell you, as having a fair amount of experience with highway packages, road packages, and tax packages that we've done over the years, that I have never seen one go through that didn't have a list. The list is never in the bill. It's always a separate list. I didn't come here today to make those kinds of allegations. I wasn't in the room for the negotiations. Whether a list exists or not, I cannot tell you. I just hope it doesn't, and we've got a process, and we'll run it through, and I assume that that's exactly what happens. But I can tell you that that statement was made by the lobbyist for Washington County, who, I don't know.
Might be good, Mr. Chair, to ask that lobbyist to explain what he said.
We can do that.
They're going to stop inviting me to caucus meetings.
One other question that I had, Senator Dukes, and I don't know if the whole committee shares the comment that you had, that the other parts of the sequestration, if we adopted your amendments to take out the sequestration, is there general agreement that the other components that are funded through the sequestration could be worked out in your Ways and Means sub? Is that fair statement? Or
not the tax credit, Mr.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Gary George. One of the notations on here was senior disabled transit, $1.8 million as part of the income tax captured. We just passed through, across the floor of the Senate, additional money is there. So some of these things that we've already, backfilled or added to programs. And so I think there is demand reduction. Those kind of things are going on by ODOT all the time. We have about a 35-person communication branch that does those kind of things. Metro's doing it. There's a lot of folks actually working on that issue. I'm just looking at the list. I think that's it. The things that are already occurring, I think what you see right here with this package is these were deals that were made to get people on board. And that's just my opinion.
So I'm can I scratch a little deeper for a kind of a yes or a no on that, just because we're going to have to make a decision here. If we remove that, what would be the will of this committee to
the co-chairs will look at that and tell us what's going to happen. We've already taken some action, as I pointed out, with senior and disabled. The engine tax credit, these are things that are required to be done already. As Senator Morris might comment too, as a person who would buy those engines, and you heard me do a remonstrance in which I talked about those new engines, amazingly efficient. I believe they'll pay for themselves. I think it's a good investment for a business person to make. And so with that in mind, I don't know if we need to actually do that portion of it.
Senator Starr, and then...
Did Senator Carter want to... Maybe that's a question.
Yeah, we'll look at the panel.
I'm just joining the course, I mean, if you want to. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Margaret Carter, House District. I'm Senate District 22. First of all, let me say I'm very appreciative of the hard work that both Senator Metzger and Senator Starr has done. Our concern here today are the general fund dollars. I mean, it's a wonderful package otherwise. And for me, take the general fund dollars out, you got to vote. There's no doubt about it. However, Mr. Chairman, when we are dealing with issues that are life-threatening, and we're dealing with senior disabled people, we're dealing with kids, we're dealing with the Oregon Health Plan to try to help very, very needy people in this state, I think they have a $4 million hole that was totally unexpected by us in our committee, and certainly in the Human Services Committee, is very hard at this particular moment. So I'm joining the course in the sequestration piece of this legislation. Now, I also will join the course if this committee or the Transportation Committee decides to look at some of these other fee bills that are around for long-term replacement of lifetime cycling of buses in mass transit, because I certainly support mass transit and support this bill. The other thing is to have the transportation, have ODOT to go back and look at the Surface Transportation Act and look at other issues that would allow us to get mass transit. This state should be in the business of financing mass transit. We have been woefully derelict in our duties to fund mass transit. So this is not against mass transit. It's $5 million this year up front that we are borrowing from the future through sequestration that we are here for. Drop the sequestration, and I bet you will have this committee on your side in this legislation. So especially, Senator Corcoran, are we not here saying away with the transportation bill? Drop sequestration, Senator Corcoran, and you got supporters.
Senator Duke said part of that money, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Duke said part of that money was for mass transit.
You know, well, it is. That's what it is.
Okay.
You know, so it has nothing to do with bridges and roads. Mm-hmm. We're there for that. But the fact is, when we're trying to cut and at the same time experiencing another hole in the general fund budget, that is problematic for us. And so I am here in particular to say I will support the transportation bill if you will drop sequestration. That's Margaret Carter. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, if I could, maybe we haven't made it clear enough. In the bill, you have a variety of fees and taxes that are there to fund roads and bridges. They're all in one way or another related to some type of motor vehicle. And you have the sequestration piece, which is pure general fund. And we're only here talking about the pure general fund piece. You can't fund things like mass transit out of road taxes because it's unconstitutional. And so they've very creatively come up with a way to do that, to do the transportation demand study, to do the mass transit. And what we're telling you is done in Ways and Means, and you passed it on the floor yesterday, we have raised approximately $1.2 million a biennium for senior and disabled mass transit. And we are probably going to be looking at some other pieces. I told my colleagues, Senator Carter and I have had some conversations, and I suspect that there is federal flexible funding that can be shifted to be used for a transportation demand study if somebody feels a great need to do that. I will tell you we have done transportation demand studies before, but if you want to do another one, there's probably another way to do that. But it's literally to separate. There is the package, as I see it, and it is a variety of fees that relate to roads and bridges and vehicles. And then there is pure general fund. And we're asking you to take out the pure general fund piece. The rest of it is cost responsible, can stand alone.
Mr. Chairman, one other comment. I think you, in this bill, you raised the registration fees. Another dollar on the registration fees, and you could have your transportation demand study. You could have, I'm sorry?
You can't.
You can't, but I thought someone said yesterday.
It would raise a bunch of money. You just couldn't spend it for that.
Okay. But there are other means, and someone mentioned yesterday, I can't remember what's the point. Yeah.
But you know. See.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, in case there's any question about the concern that I've had, and I know members of this committee have had, because I've served on Transportation Committee with Senator Dukes ever since I've been here, the idea that going back to 1980, we had 81% of our bridges rated good. In 1998, we were at 65% of our bridges rated good, and by 2002, we were at 43% of our bridges rated good. We obviously have a problem, and that is a significant decline in the condition of Oregon bridges. But... And this is where I want to point out that in the past we have supported the idea. In fact, last session in the committee that I chaired, and in the previous session when Senator Shannon was chairing it, we considered issues of Garvey bonds, bonding against. We actually, there's one of the things that we talked about doing, and that is, like, for example, these sequestered dollars. Why not take those dollars and bond those? And you multiply those at these very low interest rates. So that's a much better use of those dollars than what's going to happen here, because you're talking about borrowing against either 9.1 or 22.2, if the numbers are right, from June 4th, 2003 revenue impact. That's a substantial amount of money. But the idea of bonding for projects, taking part of the $54 million modernization and bonding that in order to get some real modernization projects out there, that's something I've advocated and been beat up for going clear back to 1997. So these are ideas that we support. We know, we recognize the need, or at least I recognize the need, and I'm sure this committee does, of where we are relative to needing to get these projects done. So it's not opposition to the concepts, because we've supported those things in the past. It's opposition to a hole being created in the general fund for what I believe just the purpose of getting supporters on board.
Senator Starr.
Imagine that. A question. If we adopt the amendments that you all propose, will you here today commit to voting yes for this bill when it hits the Senate floor?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, depends on what else you do to the bill.
I just
if you do anything else.
If we adopt the amendments that you propose, will you four of you commit to vote yes on this bill and hit the Senate floor?
If that's the only thing you do to the bill, yes.
The word that I heard was that you were going to remove the $3 million.
It's your amendment, Senator.
Huh?
The amendments that you propose.
I'm going to say to you just what Senator Dukes just said. If, in fact, there's no removal of the other fees, you know, $6-plus million from light vehicles and the $3 million or so from the heavy vehicles, if all that stays just the same, yes, I'm a yes vote on it. I've supported this from the very beginning, and I think that my objection has been the general fund plus a lack of process, open process. And we're having that today, so that satisfies one of my complaints.
So those are your two chief concerns, are sequestration piece and then the process, which...
Right, and not eliminating the total amount, because you do reduce the package, and of course if you take the $9 million out, then you eliminate cities and counties who desperately need the dollars also.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr.
Yes, definitely.
In this whole situation, it's been an extremely difficult situation for me. Because the overarching need and the importance of this bill and the significance of it is just huge. But we have a component that is problematic, and if we can remove that general fund impact, then definitely this is a bill that we all ought to enjoy. Move out of this building and get our economy moving.
Senator Carter, did you wish to?
I'm a Democrat. I don't make pledges before.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to point out, having said that, there is another piece, and I wasn't going to raise it because it's not something I've talked to my colleagues about, but there's a freight mobility section in the bill that I think is poor. It actually ties the hands of communities like I have, Astoria Seaside, where the highway is their main street, is their downtown. And in order to do something for economic development purposes to the highway, for example, the way I read the language, they would be required to go before the Transportation Commission to get an exemption because it places freight mobility as the highest priority on our state highways. And I think that right now, we're not helping our friends down in local government, and tying their hands even more would be unfortunate. So I would hope that you would consider that and deal with that. And I did want to point out that you have before you, or should have before you, a letter from State Treasurer Randall Edwards. It was submitted before, and so this should not be a new issue for those of you, but he expresses concerns about the policy of sequestration and says such a trend could lead to what some have called the balkanization of the general fund, the carving up of the general fund into inflexible parts, reducing the flexibility provided by the appropriation process. So he is also expressing concern over this piece of the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
You have the letter, July 9th, from the Treasurer, Senator Carter.
Seriously, you did hear me say in the beginning that you move sequestration, you have 4 votes. Now you know you heard that.
I recall.
That's exactly right.
Further questions for the panel, Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Morris, I just want to go back to a comment you made. You said that if we were to delete the tax credit for the environmentally clean engines that are in there for the trucking industry for purchases in Oregon, that you wouldn't have any problem with, you know, in an equal, you know, offset if that was reversing the credit was necessary. I wasn't exactly sure what you were saying there. If you could explain that a little more.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, my concern is that any reduction in fees be proportional to the actual credit that is in this bill, and that is a sunset. It does not go on. Any reduction in the fees will go on. So any adjustment that is made to make this a political solution should be done proportional to the amount of actual credit that's in the bill. And that's a very specific dollar amount. So I know that there's many issues surrounding that, but that's my concern, is that we do not build something into this bill that carries forward a reduction in fees to the truckers that is not proportional to what was agreed to in the original bill. That's the concern that I have.
Chair, if I could call. So let me explain how I interpret what you said, just so we know we're on the same page. These credits are very short term. They expire December 31st, 07. Because in January 1, 08, if you were to purchase one, you would have to purchase one of these engines. Do I understand right for saying that is that if we took this credit away, I think some of us would believe, because that's part of the thing in which we worked very hard to increase the original bill, which was roughly $101, $102 million, and we heard, at least in my caucus, and I think maybe in your caucus as well, from cities and counties, that there was not enough money for them in there, and we needed to get closer to where the governor was, which at that point was $130 million, and we were kind of stalled for about a month and a half there. And so we were able to meet that halfway point, and this credit was part of the way we got there. If we were to take that $3 million credit away, then were you saying that we could reduce the truck fees by $3 million, but only for the period through maybe December 31st, 07, because that would be the same period in which that credit would be available, and that those fees would be restored as of January 1, 08? Is that what I'm reading you say?
The specifics of how that is done, I don't have a recommendation. But my plea is that it be done just proportional to the amount of the dollars, because that is a sunset. We do need the ability to have these funds to support the bonds that we're going to be issuing, so that we're not diminishing the impact of this bill disproportionate to this whole issue.
Right.
That's my concern. How that's done, I don't have a suggestion.
Yeah, I understand. Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
The only thing, just so we understand, because when we start reducing fees, then you do get into cost responsibility. Right? I mean, the credit was part of getting to raise fees in the first place. But if you, let's say you lowered, if you eliminated $3 million credit from the trucking industry and said, okay, we're going to lower temporarily, or at least for 3 or 4 years, $3 million proportionally, and with the fees then you have to pay. Now you have to eliminate $6 million in fees for cars, roughly. I mean, that's where we get $9 million less because of cost responsibility. You can't lower those without lowering cars by their responsible level, which would be basically twice as much. And so the package would be reduced by $9 million for a period of 3 years. I mean, just under the scenario you outlined, is one possible way to do that, but that puts us back to where, closer to where the original package was that that we had originally put together, which was slightly over $100 million. Is that acceptable to you or not? I'm trying to get a read on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, I personally feel that this tax credit is de minimis in the scope of this bill. From the standpoint of the intent of the bill, it's significant from the standpoint of the general fund because we don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
We clearly don't have the money to make this concession. My recommendation would be to amend it out and move the bill.
Can I ask one other question, Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm. Senator Morris.
And I realize that this is more hypothetical, but since we're trying to get everything out on the record today, I want to ask this. If we did as your panel has suggested, and we eliminate the entire sequestration and therefore the monies that were generated from the general fund for these various things out of the bill, everything else were to stay the same, including the fees. And keeping in mind that at least in our discussions and part of the way that we got to raising these fees was an agreement to provide this assistance for the trucking industry, that if we left their fees but took away their credit and the trucking industry came out now in opposition to this bill, do you believe your members will go ahead and support the bill even despite that opposition?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, I don't know.
That's an honest answer. I do appreciate that. One question for Senator Dukes, if I might, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Senator Dukes, you had mentioned on the transit parts of the general fund that you were working in your committee on those and maybe finding some monies for those issues. Could you elaborate a little bit on that, how that might happen?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, yesterday on the floor of the Senate, we passed a bill that I carried that increases the by $3 the identification card fee for the identification card that ODOT issues. That is not constitutionally dedicated to roads and bridges. It's not tied to vehicles in any way. And that is estimated to raise $1.2 million over the next 2 years. And that money, the same bill dedicated any excess money from the identification cards to roads and bridges. You may or may not remember that during the last rebalance of 0103, we found that there was some additional money above and beyond costs for identification cards that ODOT had, and we took that money to help balance 0103. So we became aware of that fund, and this simply increases that fund and by about $1.2 million and dedicates it to senior disabled transit. So it's a little more than half of the money that you have in this bill for mass transit buses. And if I can, Mr. Chair, I'd like to remind people that there are some technical problems in the bill, which is why you were all considering doing a second bill. And I assume that those technical changes will be fixed in this bill. And then there are other things to consider. For example, the tax credit may end in 2007, but you're allowed to take it for up to 3 years after the first year. So in other words, a total of 4 years of a tax credit. So if the program sunsets in 2007 and that was the year in which you bought your vehicles, you can still take it for another 3 years. I would assume, and Mr. Yates is the expert here, that we're going to keep money in that fund to cover that tax credit for that additional 3 years. The other difficulty, as I understand it from LFO, is that the general fund, the money will be estimated, the general fund, and it will then go flow into the fund that is created in the bill. But should it be in excess of what we need for the tax credit, there's no way of getting it back out until 2007 when it sunsets. So we could continue in a recession and see money and have to change the law in order to get that money back out. So there are technical problems with the way it is in the bill today.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Further questions?
Senator, would it be possible to ask of our legislative revenue staff a question?
Please.
Thank you. Dick, the numbers that I was quoting from were the revenue impact on House Bill 2041A, and you had the total taxes and fee increases. Are those numbers changed in any way? We had the Parks and Recreation, the light vehicle, heavy vehicle, and the total. We downloaded this on the website just a few minutes ago, and it was $166.57 million for 03-05 and $124.14, and that included the Parks and Recreation section. Is that a current tax and fee increase?
The revenue impact, Mr. Chair, Senator George, the revenue impact for the B engrossed version should also be out on the net. And I think the numbers are slightly different from the A engrossed version. I don't know that I have the A engrossed with me. But for the B engrossed version, I think the same numbers you're referring to in terms of the increased taxes and fees under the bill, ignoring the income capture aspect of it,
right,
is $157 million for the 03-05 biennium.
But then Parks and Recs still
Parks
being 9
and
point?
Would still be
$9,480,000?
Yes.
Okay. And so that's where I got the 166. I added those two numbers.
Okay.
And then for the 03-05, we're talking about almost $13 million for Parks and Rec, but a total of $124.14 million in total tax and fees.
Yes.
Okay. Because what was mentioned, $100 million, and I want everyone to recognize that it's actually more than that. But I think we have an opportunity here to maximize these dollars and get projects done that need to be done. Let's just make sure this thing is clean. I think that's really critical. And the open process, Mr. Chairman, I very much appreciate this hearing today. Thank you.
For your time. I know y'all are incredibly busy, and you gave us over half an hour, so thank you very much. Dr. Yates, would you comment just briefly on the sequestration? I know it's an amendment in progress, but LRO has done some work on this, and we'd like to get an analysis or an impact statement of any new money that might be generated that you could actually put into this sequestration fund, though I know that's difficult to ascertain.
Mr. Chair, the way in which we sort of view this is an after-the-fact identification of where the personal income tax revenues came from. So, again, if we take the analogy with baseball, that's easy because you've maybe got 100 or 200 players, and you can actually track them and figure out what tax they paid, and you can identify what was actually paid by those players. In this case, you can't identify it, but you can estimate it. And so we're making an estimate, essentially, of what contracts will be funded by bond proceeds, what types of wages and salaries will be generated by those contracts, and what sort of personal income taxes will result. So it's after-the-fact determination, or at least an estimate, of what is actually going to be paid in taxes resulting from the contracts that are let and paid for by the net proceeds. Now, I think a lot of people view this sequestration as creating revenues, and that somehow these are going to be new revenues that would not otherwise be available. And we do not view it that way. The process is, you can best think about the process as you have a May forecast upon which you have to base this budget. You will get a close of session forecast in September.
Don't be laughing.
May 05.
And there'll be differences in those forecasts, and it's the job of Tom Petoskey, essentially, who is the state economist, to decide how the overall level of economic activity in the Oregon economy is going to change between the May forecast and the September forecast. Now, those changes may be changes that result in the national economy and affect Oregon. They may be analysis of what's going on in Oregon, which would include, under this program, some expenditures for rebuilding bridges. And he has to look at the overall level of economic activity in the Oregon economy, and to the extent that that changes between May and September, you will get an increase in revenue in the estimates. But you can't then go back and say, okay, this amount of that increase in revenues resulted from the work on the bridges.
So there is no way to get that number or that ballpark. Further
ballpark.
I said that with great hesitation. Senator Nelson.
When you're making these estimates, it's going to be far in excess of the $3 million or the $9 million or whatever figure we're talking about. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, not initially, because ODOT has a lot of work they have to do before they can actually go out there and start tearing down bridges and rebuilding them or repairing them. And I've worked with ODOT to try to get their best estimate of when they're going to issue the bonds and when contracts are going to be funded by those net proceeds of bonds. And it does start out fairly slowly. So in this upcoming biennium, they're well below the maximum $10 million that could, well, it's not for the first biennium, because the effective date of the bill is January 1, it's even less than that for the first biennium. But the number that I've estimated of identified revenues is $4 million.
Okay. And that all depends upon your definition of what comes out of wages and out of
correct
this whole thing. So you're actually, the definition is going to be actual work done on the ground, basically.
With the estimate, yeah.
With the estimate.
Further?
Just one question, Dick, just follow up on that.
Senator Metzger.
Dick, then, let's say 4 or 5 years into this program, you pick the number. What is your estimate then on how much income tax the bill generates in activity, say, 4 or 5 years into the bill?
You mean the sequestration
yes
part of it?
Yeah.
I don't like the use of the word generate.
Right, okay. The sequestration.
How much would we identify as revenues?
Yeah.
I think the number that I had... again, the assumption is that about $200 million a year through 2004, the fiscal year 2004-05, those generate about $12.6 million in identified revenues. But then it increases because the amount of bridge bonding increases, but you also get after that 2007 period the $300 million in modernization bonds being issued. So for those later years, I didn't even figure out what it was because you're not identifying them. The program sunsets in December 31st, 2007. So I didn't extend the, and I could, but I didn't. So I don't know what those later numbers would be, but they are irrelevant because the bill no longer identifies.
Doesn't identify them, but,
right,
but they are growing significantly each
yeah
year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Blevins, Mr. Tucker, if you could discuss the -19s through -21s. Is Representative Beyer? Representative Beyer, would you like to? You're okay. Thank you.
You can go, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Randy Tucker, 1000 Friends of Oregon. I thought I'd go first since I'm the one that put in those amendments. And I'm going to refer to them in reverse order, 21, 20, 19. Okay. By way of introduction, as you probably know, 1000 Friends has worked for many years to ensure that our transportation policies reinforce rather than undermine the land use and growth management policies that protect Oregon's quality of life. We support adequate funding for Oregon's transportation system because, in our view, the entire system benefits when sufficient funding is available for all modes and suffers when it is not. That's why we've suggested what seems to us like a common sense amendment requiring projects selected for financing under this package to conform to and implement Oregon's Oregon's highway plan and the state's land use planning program. That's the Dash 21 amendments. Frankly, we believe that this amendment should apply not just to this package, but to all future transportation projects as well, or that there should be a similar provision in future funding packages, though this amendment, of course, only applies to this package. This amendment would ensure that we spend our scarce resources on the needed projects, on needed projects that already have broad support, as demonstrated by their inclusion in state and local plans, and where the arguing is largely done and the community is ready to get the project built. In addition, we believe this is consistent with the way the OTC has been working recently. We believe this will provide needed assurance about consistency with good planning while allowing quality projects to be built. Second, the Ready for Construction Amendment, the Dash B20s. We've suggested these amendments to clarify the intent of language that is already in the bill, prioritizing projects that are ready for construction. And let me note that we also appreciate the fact that this provision, the provisions in the bill, though it didn't come out exactly the way we'd hoped, and that's why we've been working to change the language. We don't think that it's a dramatic change, but it clarifies what the intent of those of that language is. And Senator Metzger, let me also note, I did finally at about midnight last night hear the recording of the hearing where you did raise this issue with Chairman Corey, so I'm aware of that. Thank you. So at any rate, this amendment would ensure that the transportation dollars created by the bill are spent on projects that have really done their homework, projects that truly comply with environmental and land use laws that are ready to build. It's a fiscally responsible approach that would prevent wasting dollars on projects that have fatal flaws or that are years away from being built. When we introduced this language over on the House side, it was sort of last minute. It just got printed, or basically the morning of the hearing. And we heard some concerns that it would have unintended consequences of creating sort of a catch-22 that stopped ODOT from building anything, because how could you get a project ready for construction if you couldn't spend any money on it? Obviously, that's not our intent. Contrary to what is sometimes said about Thousand Friends, we don't oppose building new roads if they're good projects. And in fact, we think this language basically, again, memorializes the approach that the OTC took in implementing OTIA, the package that was passed in 2001. I have talked to Legislative Council about this, and I'm satisfied right now that the language doesn't create any unnecessary unreasonable roadblock to project funding. We're certainly willing to talk to ODOT and anybody else about whether they other concerns they may have about this. Finally, the B19 amendments delete Section 38 of the bill. Section 38 of House Bill 2041 prohibits modification of state highways that are identified freight routes in any way that would reduce the vehicle carrying capacity of the road. Now, we certainly understand the importance of preserving the capacity of our state highway system, and we have long worked to protect the value of Oregon's taxpayers' investment in that system through common sense access management, which can prevent the capacity of our highways from being unnecessarily degraded or eroded. But we believe there are times and places where capacity protection is not the most important value we should be defending. The language in this section could jeopardize efforts to promote economic development by revitalizing downtowns and to provide improvements for transit, bicycles, and pedestrians in cities across the state. Under this provision, communities that want to pursue a wide range of Main Street improvements would have to seek special waivers from the OTC because their main streets are state highways that are designated as freight routes. Newburgh could potentially face a new hurdle to its downtown renovation plans. Grants Pass might have been unable to do many of the Main Street improvements that they recently undertook with ODOT help, and which have been featured in a video recently created about good downtown development. Other kinds of examples of improvements that could reduce capacity would be adding on-street parking to support downtown retail development, widening sidewalks, again for the same purpose, addition of bike lanes, certain transit facilities, installing curb extensions at crosswalks, etc. Just some examples of towns that whose main street is also a state highway that is also a freight route, if I have my freight routes right. Redmond, Highway 97, Madras, Highway 97, Klamath Falls, Highway 97, Sisters, Highway 20, Sandy, Highway 26, Astoria, Highway 30. I'm not sure if Highway 101 is identified freight route, but if so, you've got towns up and down the coast that would be affected. Elkton and Coquille on Highway 38, and I don't know the number of the highway that goes through Coquille. So the way we read this bill, the prohibition applies not just to projects that are funded as part of this package, but also to all future projects. Now, language was added, Section 38 sub 3 in the bill, that modifies this prohibition by allowing the OTC to grant exemptions to it. But the default remains putting freight capacity above almost any other public value with respect to these facilities. And in our view, this is a bad precedent to set and is not necessary, certainly, to move forward a transportation funding package. So just to summarize, in general, as we've said for a long time, we are much less concerned with where the money comes from in a package like this than on how it's spent. We strongly support funding for repairing and maintaining the existing road network. We believe that when we're building new roads, it's important to use good policy to govern the way we select and design those roads. These amendments address those concerns. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Were you part of the work group?
The work group.
Work on drafting.
We were invited to a meeting in the House after the bill was first developed, and there was the one large meeting where we floated a couple of these. We discussed some of these issues at that time. So if that's what you consider the work group, we were involved in that one meeting.
And on the B-19s, just so I'm clear on it, so if I'm the mayor of Coquille and I would like to add a sidewalk and some parking spots to my downtown area, under Section 38, I would have to go and get a special exemption from the OTC to implement my plan?
If it reduces the freight capacity or the vehicle carrying capacity of that road. And that's my understanding of the amendment. And you know, when you put it in context, these freight routes, they're long. They're several hundred miles long in many cases. And they might pass through a downtown for a half a mile or a mile or whatever it might be, depending on the size of the town. Allowing cities to make some good decisions about how they'd like to revitalize their downtown or the way they'd like it to look or the way they'd like to promote economic development seems to be not an unreasonable approach, and it's certainly the way we do things right now. I don't really see that it's caused any major problems. So making the default scenario that you can't do it unless you go and ask for permission from the OTC seems unnecessary.
Senator Metzger.
Yeah, question. Randy, with the what the thing, the amendment does say, and I think you quoted it correctly, was to say that you cannot permanently reduce the capacity. So it doesn't say whether you can or cannot add sidewalks, but it says if you're actually going to take the lanes away where you can't bring have fewer cars or trucks going on there, that's the first trigger. It's not, you're adding improvements. But the question I'd have for you is that does it not say that in asking for an exemption, let's say you do this and it actually is going to reduce the capacity of the road for the Oregon Traffic Commission, the Oregon Transportation Commission, that they would approve it unless it, the word is unreasonably limits the movement of traffic. I think that's a pretty strong word. What that says is that it's unreasonable. And if you add sidewalks or whatever, and to a point where something is unreasonable, then yeah, they might not accept it. But as long as it is quote reasonable, I don't know. I think that's a pretty limiting word there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, yes, that word is there. Also, the word. The way that sentence is written is the commission may grant the exception.
Mm-hmm.
And so another improvement might be to say the commission shall grant the exception or exemption unless it finds that the proposed action is unreasonable.
Okay.
So that would certainly, you know, be an improvement from our perspective.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'll oppose the amendment, no surprise to you, Randy, but this is a recognition, members of the committee and members of the audience, that freight mobility and movement of freight in this state is an issue of statewide concern. And that's why you have the OTC at the table in this. Whether you have a local community that wants to do something in their local community, recognizing that we've got major state facilities that go through downtowns, the movement of freight in this state is good for the entire state, and it's an issue of statewide concern. And that's why we amended this section to accommodate, accommodate local government's concerns about it, so that we had the bill drafted so there was no out at all. You just basically couldn't reduce capacity, freight capacity at all. We provided an out for local governments. This is the out. The out is that if it's a statewide concern, we have to take the issue to a body that has that statewide perspective. That's the Oregon Transportation Commission, represented by people from all over the state. And that's why it's in here, and that's why I think it's important that it stay in here in the way that it is. It's not overly burdensome to have a local government go to the OTC, who meets on a monthly basis, and say, here's our idea. All of these things, anytime you do any work on any road in this state, it goes through a lengthy process. There's always opportunities for appeal and for comment by the public, by 1,000 Friends. They're at the table all the time. And local governments at the state, the county, this isn't going to happen in a vacuum. And this allows that statewide concern about moving freight in the state that keeps our economy moving to have that statewide perspective. Doesn't preclude that a local government can add a sidewalk, can improve their downtown, can do the things that local communities like Newburgh, like Hillsboro, like a variety of places all over this state have done. It wouldn't preclude that at all. It would just require the recognition that freight mobility in this state, movement of goods and services in this state, is key to our economy and key to the economic health and viability of this state, and requires a statewide perspective. And so that's why it's in the bill. That's why I think it should stay in the bill. Randy had the opportunity on the House side to make his case, at a table with all the stakeholders there, including representatives from the governor's office. And the decision at that point was made that we'd amend it slightly to accommodate the concerns of local governments, but that we were going to move on. So that's kind of a little bit of a view of why it's in here and why I think it's important that it stay.
That is helpful. I'd like to hear from local governments. It's important to me. The other side of that coin is that the revitalization of downtowns is also just critical to the economic viability of the state. And so it'd be important for me to hear from 1,000 Friends and from OEC, but also from local governments, that they really feel the latitude is there to do necessary projects and to have the ability to prove their downtowns. I think you can go to any corner of the state and look at the success stories that downtowns have been nationally acclaimed for of what they're doing, and so I'd hate to do anything that would preclude them from venturing forward.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I don't disagree with, obviously, that freight movement is an issue of statewide significance or statewide importance. We certainly don't have any issues with that. We believe there are other concerns as well that shouldn't necessarily be placed lower on the scale than that, and I think that possibly, instead of the amendment that we've offered, changing the may to a shall would give us a lot more comfort with the language in the bill.
Mr. Blevins, and if we could get someone from local government to join us. Mr. Blevins.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. Just quickly, just want to clarify that OEC definitely supports the intent of this bill. We support increasing registration fees to fund the maintenance and preservation of safe and efficient operation of Oregon's roads and bridges. So we definitely think that this package is headed in the right direction. We want to see, in the end, a successful package here. But we continue to have a couple of concerns that we just want to voice. One is the aforementioned issue about maintenance. main streets, and I won't go into that anymore because I think that's been vetted as much as we need to. But the other is the tax credit for diesel engines. And again, our big concern here is that that under federal requirements, all the engines being produced starting next year are going to be these cleaner burning engines, and it doesn't seem to make sense to us to be providing tax credits with with the money that it doesn't seem to be of great supply here this budget session for people to do something that they're going to be doing anyway. We think that if you're going to sequester money and offer it for things in the state for transportation, that there's a lot better uses out there that are going to be better for the environment and better for the public, whether that's funding the trains that are currently on the chopping blocks right now, or some of the other projects that are identified in the bill. That's a better use of this than to provide a tax credit for the trucks that are doing something they're already going to be required to do under federal law. So that's really the gist of our concern, and we would encourage the committee to reassess whether or not that's the best use of the money. At the very least, we would encourage the committee to look at changing the language so that if you are going to provide this tax credit, that you at least require the truck drivers who take advantage of this tax credit to retire the engines that they're then replacing with these new engines. Right now, under the law, you could use this tax credit, buy a new engine, and then sell this old engine to be used on the road again. So that doesn't really get us anywhere in terms of reducing overall pollution in the state. So at the very least, we should be getting these engines off the road if we're going to provide this tax credit. But we would argue there's a lot better uses for this money in the transportation picture for the state. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Mayor Tory, thank you for joining us.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, I thank you for allowing me to come up here. I was planning to testify on the initial bill, and I'm going to quickly say that the League of Oregon Cities supports passage of the original bill. I've sat here and listened to the discussion with the other senators. I understand the complexities that you're dealing with. I would urge that whatever you end up doing with this, please take into consideration the urgent needs that local governments have to use the funds that were set up in the original bill. And I would tell you, from an economic standpoint, local governments are prepared to immediately start spending those dollars. Now, we feel strongly about the importance of the bridges, but the bridges will take time. The Willamette Bridge between Eugene and Springfield, for example, we've been working on that for 5 months now, just trying to get all of the greenway issues dealt with and the permitting issues dealt with. The point I'm making is when you talk about maintenance dollars, we can immediately start putting people on the street, repaving roads, fixing those streets, and that will have an immediate economic impact. But I think I got up here because you wanted me to speak to the other issue. And I take advantage of it whenever I can. With regard to the other issue, I honestly believe that you did give local government the opportunity to participate in the discussion because we were not satisfied with the initial language. I am now satisfied with the language that currently exists in the bill. And Eugene, even though I'm here representing the League of Oregon Cities as the chair of the Transportation Committee, the city of Eugene does a lot of the type of activity that you were talking about and they were talking about. What I found, particularly in the last couple of years in dealing with the Oregon Department of Transportation, they are equally concerned about the environmental impacts of projects, and I believe we have an adequate opportunity to work with them to deal with our issues and our concerns. Now, speaking not as the chair of the League of Oregon Cities Transportation Committee, I will tell you I'm very much concerned about the amendment that would say make these projects ready. As a mayor of a city that has spent more time trying to get the West Eugene Parkway constructed than President Roosevelt took in order to get the Panama Canal constructed, I urge you not to allow people who have a different agenda to get in the way of the project. And this does not necessarily only have to deal with the city of Eugene. This could be any bridge anywhere that somebody has a concern about. And reasonable people ought to be able to do things to help the economy of the state work. And I appreciate what all of you have done with this bill. I urge you not to impact negatively cities and counties. And I urge you to move this forward. And I am so scared that if the bill is changed, and you may have to change it, but if the bill is changed, can we get it out of the other house and back in a position that the governor can get it to sign it before you all go home? And I'd be open for any questions.
Thank you. Appreciate it. points. So on section 37, just for clarity, you feel there is.
I believe that the League of Oregon Cities have had ample opportunity to have their concerns dealt with, and there was give and take, and I'm confident that we can make this work.
Section 38.
And frankly, I don't remember, but you're talking about the ability to have roads developed within the city limits. 101, for example, going through Florence or Newport.
For the freight mobility, which Senator
that's
Carson,
freight mobility issue.
Strongly and eloquently.
Yes.
Florence.
Yes.
The other side of the coin, and this would certainly would be important to myself to know that that's an important point. The other side of that is the ability for local government to do what they've done very successfully in the last decade, which is to revitalize their downtowns. And I want to ensure there is no disincentive here that would preclude a mayor or city council to take action, weighing the freight mobility issue with a good, solid plan to revitalize their downtown. As I read Section 38, I feel disincentive there. You have a better perspective.
I would tell you that if the mayor had the opportunity to do it immediately without any consent of anyone, of course, that would be the easiest. But the fact is, a good kingdom is nice. You just don't get many of them. But the fact is, that all of these things are some give and take. And the initial language we couldn't live with. And the language that we have now, I think, provides us adequate safety to be able to do what we want to do. I frankly would be more concerned that people who would use it against cities wanting to do something would impose it. And frankly, that would be my concern. I have to answer it and say, is it perfect? No. Is it 95%? In my opinion, it is.
Senator Metzger.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, because they're in the audience now, as I certainly share the same concern that all the panelists have expressed about downtowns, and I think Mr. Tucker even mentioned one of the downtowns on a major route is Mayan Highway 26 through Sandy. And my community there has those same concerns about trying to revitalize downtown and make it a community friendly. In fact, they even introduced a bill on behalf of the city to take over control of Highway 26. But, you know, I'm very pleased in terms of what actually happens in reality in working with the department. That bill did not have to move because the city of Sandy and the Department of Transportation signed an agreement, a historic agreement, to allow the city to take control of most of Highway 26 now. They have worked very cooperatively with individual communities because they also share both those values, the value of moving freight and people through communities, and the value of sustainable communities and building, you know, what communities find very, very important for their downtown. And that was reflected in the agreement of Sandy taking control of I-26 there by the department. So I'm totally comfortable with the language that was put in the bill and the intentions of the department in recognizing the importance of the vitality of our hometowns that happen to have major highways running through them. So I think that's a real experience, Mr. Chair, in just the last few months that shows that the department is very, very concerned about that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I just make a comment? I also want to make clear, we don't have any idea that there's any nefarious intentions over at ODOT or the OTC about this either. Just don't see any need for this language. We don't see that there's been a problem that this language is necessary to fix, and we're concerned with the precedent that it sets. So, going forward.
I'm going to bite my tongue, Mr. Chair.
And feel a tongue being bitten. Thank you very much. Appreciate the
thank
time.
You.
Judge Pryor, Mr. Fuller, Mr. Martin. Members, it's 10:45. We're on the floor. We're excused. I'd like to get through the testimony today, if we could. And if someone wants to take credit for the dash 23s and 24s.
The dash 23s look like to me to be the Ways and Means Subcommittee amendments.
Right.
The dash 24s are look to me to be identical to the dash 19s.
The 23s, Ways and Means Sub, 24s, that's my reading.
Look to be this identical as the 19s. I don't know where they came from.
A different part. Madam Judge.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Laura Pryor, and I'm the judge of Gillam County, and I'm chairman of the Association of Oregon County's Transportation Committee. I'm here on behalf of the association to support 2041B as it sits. We understand that there's a lot of discussion about this, but we have watched this for more than 6 months and believe that everybody has worked very hard to craft something that seems to work for everyone. As one of your compatriots said at one time, this is such a complex bill that there's certainly something for anybody to dislike, as well as something for everyone to dislike. The reason we're supporting this bill, when you see me, you see 36 counties. That's who I represent, from the very smallest to the largest counties. Right now, it's been 12 years since the counties have and cities have had hardly any modern maintenance and preservation money just to take care of the roads. We've not had an increase. By the next session, by the time we would get the money, it'll be over 15 years. During that time, a lot has happened. We've had cost of living that has just increased, and we haven't kept up with it at all. A lot of policy decisions have been made, some of them by necessity. For example, if you're working with ODOT and you need to do a project, it's very helpful if you have match. With not having any increase in revenues, that's getting harder and harder for local jurisdictions to do. I want to try to put this bill in perspective. This bill really is a bridge bill. Now, it has some other things in it, but basically it's focused on trying to keep those of us that are driving from driving on a bridge that's going to fall into a canyon or a river someplace. This bill will give my county $15,000 a year. That's what we will recognize out of this bill, other than bridges. Put it in perspective, and we have about $1 million budget every year to run our road system. Washington County will get about $1.9 million out of this, but they have almost a $60 million a year budget for their road system. The streets and roads and highways of this state are in trouble. The bridges, there's no doubt, they have to be taken care of. But by the next session, I think cities and counties will have to be thinking about doing something else. We've got to find a way to take care of our system. We believe that with some focus finally on freight is a good thing. You can't move 50 million bushels of grain around this state unless you've got freight, unless we want to stop exporting grain, which is one of the only things the United States exports. So we support this bill, and we hope that everyone will respect the difficulty that you've all had trying to get this bill to this point with everybody on board. It's a very complex issue. I'll be glad to take any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller, and I work for the New Car Dealers Association, and I'm here in support of tax credits for professional baseball players who buy large SUVs. I'm sorry, that's the wrong testimony. I'm actually here today in my capacity as president of the Oregon Highway Users Alliance in support of the bill as it came over from the House. There was a key phrase that one of the Senate Transportation Ways and Means Subcommittee members mentioned this morning, and that is, this is a wonderful package, except. And then it trailed off from there. And just in my short notes, the except was sequestration, freight mobility, tax credits, senior and disabled transportation, amendments clarifying transportation demand study financing, expanding sidewalks, curbs, cities and counties. You can bring every member of the Senate or the House before this committee, and every one of them can sort of finish the sentence, this is a wonderful package, except. You can bring up every stakeholder who's participated in the negotiation of this package, and every one of them can tell you this is a wonderful package, except. This package has a lot of problems. The problem is, if you fix those problems, you create an equal or larger set of problems, and you still end up with a bill that everybody can answer, it's a wonderful package, except. It took 5 months to get where we are today, some could argue we've got another 5 months to renegotiate a new package if you want to, but I would recommend that you take the hard work that's already been done with the stakeholders that acknowledges that any bill of this size and of this magnitude is going to have problems, and you move the bill to the floor the way it came over from the House, because we don't know what's going to happen if you fix the problems that some perceive in the bill, because we may not have 5 months to then readdress the new problems that are created in fixing the old problems. There has been a tremendous amount of work that has gone into building and crafting this house of cards, if you will, and our concern is that the notion that you can pull one or two cards out of the middle of this house and the house will remain standing is a risk that the Highway Users Alliance would rather not take. We believe that the package has considered all of the issues that have been addressed today in one form or another, and that the best package that could be crafted this session is a package that's already before you. And for at this hopefully late date in the session, and I do hope we're late in the session, to begin to renegotiate a package of this magnitude, we believe would imperil the entire process of getting a transportation funding package to the governor's desk. And with that, we would encourage you to simply repass the bill as it is written. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Darrell, what if this package doesn't have the votes in the Senate to pass?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we believe that it does, and obviously if it doesn't have the votes, then you come back and you end up having to recraft it. I know that we as an association and that members of your chamber have done a head count and believed that the votes were there. And I understand that there are some concerns about the bill. Again, if you change it, I don't have as much confidence that a changed bill is going to have the votes in this chamber and then have the votes in the other chamber than the current package has in terms of the count that we did. That's a difficult question to answer, and I can't stand up here in confidence and say, I know I've got the votes regardless. It's impossible to do that. But understand that there are three spheres you're dealing with here. There's the votes in the chamber, there are the stakeholders and their impacts on the votes in the chamber, and then there's a budgeting process. And all three of those were carefully considered in crafting the package that we have, and you're not going to get a package that is perfect. You're going to get a package that has no votes, and you're going to get a package that has warts on it. It probably is just a question of who your no votes are and you know how close to the threshold you can get. And I think that what Senator Starr and Senator Metzger and Representative Brown and Representative Beyer and Pat Egan in the governor's office have crafted is a bill that gets you past your constitutional problem in both chambers.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I respond to that for just a second? The cities and counties are sitting here knowing that if there's a change made and there's a rebalance, it'll probably be done on our backs. But we're still here at the table.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's accurate. I know.
No,
that's
I know.
There.
I know, but I mean, but that sure is a that. Chance. And we know that, but we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association, and I'm here to emphasize what Darrell just said. Transportation packages are like marriages, not all of which you really appreciate or care for. That was brought home to me last night when I spent 2.5 hours building a rock wall that my wife insisted we needed, and then left 2 cups out on the counter and was told I never did a damn thing around here to heat the place up. The Ways and Means Committee's suggestion to you means zero for transit. Means zero for transit. There's $2 million in here that would go for not, and I want to emphasize because misstatements were made in front of you, it is not for senior and disabled. That was in an earlier portion of the package. This is strictly for bus replacement. The Ways and Means Subcommittee has done a wonderful job on, as Senator Dukes pointed out, in augmenting and keeping up because some money was taken out, general fund money was taken out of senior and disabled. They found, as the way she's talking about, money to put it back in senior and disabled. We're happy with senior and disabled. We need more, but we're not going to even ask for it this session. But we desperately need the part of the package, the $2 million for a bus replacement. There's a nexus. There's a connection between bridges and buses. In the metropolitan area, TriMet takes 22,000 cars a day, carloads, off of the Steel and the Hawthorne Bridge. Light Rail takes 22,000 cars off the Steel Bridge each day because people are on that transit. There's a reason for that. We don't have the figures for Salem, where Salem Area Transit takes off the bridge across the river, and Eugene and the rest of them. This whole blow-up started when a fiscal analyst down the hall, who wasn't here in the past, suddenly discovered that this whole thing about taking income tax money and sequestering it, as if it is something that's never happened before. Now, let me go back in history, since I'm the oldest living person in this room, and I can give you the historical background of this.
Ted Hughes is a little upset by that comment. But
well, I'm sorry, Ted. No, Ted is the oldest living human being in the room. I'm next. In 1979, when the light rail was first recognized and funded by the Oregon legislature, the issue was raised by Dick Feeney. And he pointed out that the money generated by the East Side Light Rail would more than pay for what was being appropriated. And it turned out to be exactly that. We didn't sequester anything, but that light rail project generated more income tax revenue for the state of Oregon than it cost in the appropriation that was made. In 1995, when the package was put together to fund the North-South Light Rail, actual sequestration was put into the bill, and we said to fund the trade-off, which was not to fund the light rail, but the downstate transportation projects for cities and counties downstate would be funded out of sequestering the income tax revenue raised from that project. Now, unfortunately, that project was derailed by a fellow who's, by, and I didn't bring his name up again, a former legislator who referred to the voters and was killed. But the sequestering has been around. And going back to what's been said before, you're never going to get a perfect package. But I'm telling you, if we get left out, we're going to really be upset, because the $2 million out of this whole package is a relatively small amount for bus replacement. You need to know how that's used. We each year get from the federal government funds. In 2001, it was $7.5 million. 2002, it was $10 million. And this fiscal year, it will be $11 million of bus replacement funds, which require a 20% match from the local community. And it's a struggle. It ticks off Gordon Smith and Ron Wyden and their staffs immeasurably when the city of Lakeview applies for a grant, gets it, and then they don't have a local match. This money will enable each community around the state. Yes, it'll be TriMet, but it'll also be the Lakeviews, the Redmonds, the other small communities in this state that have asked for money in the past to be able to match that and get the bus replacements. Now, if you think that taking this out of the package and that down there on the other end of the hall they're going to find a replacement, I got a bridge I can sell you. So please leave us in this thing and pass this as a whole, because that's the only way this package is going to be successful, in my opinion. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I saw four heads nod when the question was asked, does the bus component get funded with flexible federal funds? And I don't know if Mr. Warner would like to comment at all on this, but
I don't know if he wants
me, to. That to me is significant, and I looked very closely to see if I saw four heads nodding. I did, and so that means something, at least to me.
I'd like to believe that. I think the chairman of the committee thought the money was for senior disabled, and they had already funded it, which he was correct. They have already funded that. They have not funded bus replacement funds, and I'm not sure that they're going to find the flexible funds available to do that. Part of those flexible funds are the very same funds that another member of that panel wants to use on rail. And this is deja vu all over again. The budget analyst in 1981 was a classmate of Senator Nelson's, Dan Simmons, and I spent 5 hours with wonderful budget analysis. He looked me in the eye in 81 and said, Roger, it's too desperate. We'll catch you next session. And next session's never happened. And I spent 5 hours with Dan this week, and he said the worst mistake the state makes is the failure to substantially support our transportation systems. He's lived back east for 5 years. He understands you can't get there from here without public transportation in large communities. And whether people like it or not, we have large communities in Oregon that have tremendous traffic problems.
Thank you very much.
Comment, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think, you know, for the record, we're having this hearing again today to go over some of these issues because some, you know, things were concerned that felt they weren't involved in. I think it's interesting to note that the panel sitting before you now is the Senate Transportation Committee, and the you know, the Revenue Committee is not here other than the members that are already on, which was very parallel to our original hearing, joint Revenue and Senate hearing. But I do want to ask a question, and you don't all have to
defend the Senate Revenue Committee.
And, do it at the party.
Because I think this is an important part of where we are today. I think some of the issues have been brought up. But some of the concerns from our colleagues have felt that, have said that there wasn't sufficient process, you know, that they weren't involved and now have an opportunity to comment. And because of the faces I'm seeing here, it seems like, you know, we're old friends from this process. You know, I'd like to have any of you react to the fact that you felt that this process over the last 5.5 months has been, I think as one of our panelists previous said, was done in the dead of night and no one was aware of it or had an opportunity to participate. And I think for the record, I'd like to hear those of you who have worked very hard on this, if that's also been your reaction as well.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond first? Because I've been here when we did things in the dead of night, and some good things were done in the dead of night. The Oregon Beach Bill is the result of a negotiation in private in my living room of a house here in Salem I shared 30 years ago. We wouldn't have gotten the Oregon Beach Bill if we had done it in the dead of night. But that's not current dealings. We've done this innumerable meetings, and Daryl can talk about it. The Oregon Highway Users Group, which doesn't agree on a lot of things, have talked about this. We've publicly testified in the House Transportation Committee, the Senate Transportation Committee. I think it's been a very open process. Because some members of the Ways and Means Committee, who unfortunately get left locked up in rooms down there for 6 months at a time, did not fully know about it, is really maybe an error on some of our parts, but it was unintentional, and it certainly is not the result of things being done in the dead of night.
Chair, could I just...
Please, Senator Nelson.
I just want to know that our caucus was fully informed by Senator Starr that there were two major problems, one with Multnomah County, the East Multnomah, Central Multnomah County Committee problem, and the sequestration. He said, if you guys have any problems with that, please come talk. And that was at least a month ago. So, I mean, from my viewpoint, with all due respect to my colleagues in my caucus, information was there. It was theirs to have.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, if I just respond, and I certainly am not going to question the statements of the Ways and Means Transportation Subcommittee, who were not aware because they hadn't had a chance to delve into the issue, perhaps, in a way they would have liked to. I can only say that I remember reading the articles in the paper when members of this chamber and the governor's office were frustrated with the Speaker of the House because she wouldn't release the bill until everybody had a chance to see everything that was in the bill, until everybody had signed off on the bill, and that there was tremendous angst in this building because they took so long on the House side. And so it seems to me that there was ample opportunity and frustration with the House that they took as long as they did to craft a budget or to craft a package that everybody on the Senate side had opportunity to review and comment on before it moved out of the House. So I guess from the Oregon Highway Users Alliance perspective, again, I'm not going to question what the initial panel said, but there were a lot of us that were frustrated that the bill took so long to get here because the House was so careful to make sure that everybody had an opportunity to review the bill before it came over.
So the only comment I would have, Daryl, is I think the two chambers are at play here, and so I think this is the Senate's opportunity to carefully review and consider amendments to the bills. I think we're perfectly entitled and should do. And I think that's what's occurring today, and that was the request that, that would occur today. Thank you. Mr. Salzgiver, Mr. Watt, Mr. Lundquist, and Mr. Ledger. Afternoon. Morning. Salzgiver.
Good evening. This being the dead of night, I'll go ahead. For the record, Mr. Chairman, Mike Salzgiver of the Portland Business Alliance. First of all, I want to commend you for the work you've done in bringing this bill forward, the work that Chair Metzger has done, Vice Chair Starr on the Senate Transportation side, Chairman Brown, Representative Beyer, Representative Mabry. When the Alliance set its legislative priorities in the fall, we highlighted this as one of our top three. There are very few bills that you will do this session that are going to have an immediate impact economically as this one will. We've all talked about the job, 4,700 jobs that will be created, the capital investment that will be coming forward. This is perhaps one of the most important things you'll do besides PERS reform this session. So we commend you for your work. I want to associate myself completely with the comments of Mr. Martin. Those were some of the same points that I would have raised, but he raised them first. I won't waste your time repeating them. This is not a new tool, sequestration. I used to work for a chairman of appropriations committee, so I understand the concerns that appropriators have in using tools in a way that they may not be fully aware of, but this is not a new thing, and we think it's entirely appropriate, given the nature of the structure of this agreement, that it continue and move forward. With that, we strongly believe that this bill needs to be passed back out as it stands, with no amendments, and that this intricate agreement that has been reached over these last 5 or 6 months continue. As I mentioned in another committee, it might have been yours, Mr. Chairman, I've testified on this one several times this session, but there's a lot more to do in the transportation realm. This is a significant step, but it's not the only step. We have a lot of work to do in getting Oregon's transportation infrastructure to the degree it needs to be at, and so we look forward to continuing the discussion going forward. We think, however, this package is the best that can be done right now, and we strongly encourage you to get it passed and get it back out and get it up to the governor as fast as we can. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. My name is John Watt. I'm representing the Mitford Jackson County Chamber today. First of all, I might warn the committee that the bridge Mr. Martin was referring to that he'd like to sell you is in Weimar, Oregon. It collapsed into Evans Creek earlier this week. We, too, are before you today encouraging you to pass 2041 in its existing form. I would only address the process because I have had an opportunity to serve on both sides of the process. Personally, on this side of the process, I have no staff, unlike legislators, unlike committees, and I had a pretty good handle on what was going on, even though I wasn't at the table every day. Within an hour or two, I knew what was going on through Senator Starr's office and some other contacts that I have. It's important to my clients that I'm able to do that. And to say that this bill passed in the dark of night or in secret is somewhat disingenuous, with all due respect to those who made that comment. So I would just encourage you to look at the package as an entirety. We're talking about $2.5 billion. We're talking about bridges that have to be fixed. We're talking about safety issues for Oregonians, and that, even though I made a humorous comment about a bridge, there were three people sitting on that bridge. It was an old bridge. It was a wooden bridge. But we can't afford to let that happen to any of our existing bridges. We won't remember the arguments that we make today if we pass this package. But if you don't pass this package, Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Letcher.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be very brief because I think everything's pretty much been said. AOI is a strong supporter of this bill. We have thousands of members that are, frankly, wasting a lot of money by shipping extra distances because they can't go over bridges. It's hurting them. It's hurting their families. It's hurting the environment because we're putting on a lot more truck miles than we need to. We would urge you to pass this bill. My concerns with some of the things we heard today, some of the amendments, it's very difficult to build a road, to get it through all the hoops and all the permits, and especially looking at a couple of the amendments that were offered, they just seem to make, essentially put up more targets to slow the process down, and we'd be very concerned about that. We support the bill. We're very concerned that if something kind of unravels on this, it will fall down like a deck of cards, and we're a little worried about that. We support the bill, and we hope to see it come out, and we'll certainly commend you all to our members. That's doing a great job.
Thank you. One question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn Lundquist with the Oregon Business Association. A couple of my lobby colleagues up here have mentioned Mr. Martin's name. I'll do the same. I think we should have the full story whenever we hear things, and I would tend to believe that that I would be on his wife's side. He was probably supervisor in the Rock Building and was probably had more than two cups that he had dirtied the kitchen with.
I had a very similar thought about the supervisory role.
But having said that about one of the senior members, OBA certainly does support this package. I won't go into any of the details. You've had all the pros and that sort of thing. But I want to talk about something a little bit different that was mentioned here with the Senate, and no one has really picked up on it. I think one of the things the senators are saying is that they're down there working ways and means trying to save money. We all know that needs to happen. And so the Revenue Committee now takes away $4 or $5 million. The real issue is this. The issue is, what are you spending the $4 or $5 million on? If those services, if the transportation that Mr. Martin is talking about, the buses, if that's essential, then so be it. And I think you need, and you stand solid on that. You don't have to back up from that. We, as you know, have talked about some standards that we think we need to have in our state before we, so we don't let it fall off the cliff. And that's all this is talking about. Yes, there may be $4 million less available in general fund this biennium because of that. But let me remind you, and I know you're painfully aware of it, is that you are going to have to find new revenue that exceeds $4 million by a whole bunch. And you need to stand up to that process and make that happen. And so I don't think you want to back down simply because there's $4 million because the services are valuable and there. We support the measure as it is, and certainly both the others will work to make to try to get the votes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony. We've got a group here that represents this significant business interest in the state from Portland to Southern Oregon. The question I have is, I bet Freightliner is a member of one of your organizations. I'm not sure which one, but I bet they are. So whoever that person is, I'd like a comment on how a tax credit, a diesel engine tax credit, would affect that particular employer in the state. And in addition to that, the tax credit, in order to attain the tax credit, I believe the truck, we've crafted this bill that the engine would have to be purchased in Oregon. My guess is there may be other members of your association that are truck engine dealers or tractor dealers, and it is a fact that there is no other state in the union that's going to provide this kind of tax credit to trucking companies, and the opportunity to have trucking companies relocate to this state, and what kind of economic value that would have in generating really more income taxes back to the state. So those are my questions. I'd open it up for whoever wants to answer that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, we usually don't identify who our members are, but let's just suppose they were a member of AOI, as John Ledger. That could constitute an enormous amount of work. Building a truck engine is a heavy-duty, high-paying job. It's skilled labor. The
particular company you're talking about has fallen on hard times. They've laid off literally thousands of people. They pay good wages. I think something like this tax credit is going to help them a lot. It's going to help Portland a lot because those people go out and they spend money throughout the entire Portland area. Tax credits do work. You wouldn't have them offered as a way to reduce mileage driving by giving them to insurance companies if people didn't think that they worked. They do work, and they do entice companies here. And if a company is not enticed here and you don't use the credit, well, you haven't lost anything one way or the other. And if it does work here, those are very good paying jobs. So something like that will, I think, will help a company that is a good employer that is in some distress. And I think only good can come from it. It's environmentally beneficial because if you do switch out your engine before you have to, then you have reduced those emissions. I don't think we should assume there is an endless, bottomless pit for use of diesel engines. I think when you buy a new engine, I think it's not a given that the old engine always gets used. Otherwise, we would be 6 feet deep in diesel engines by this time. And there's only so much of a capacity for them. So I think this is good for jobs, good for the environment.
Well, I was only going to mention from the Medford Chamber's point of view that if you're giving incentives to buying new merchandise in an area, that merchandise has to be painted, it's got to have new tires, and any number of things, and those are our members.
Chair Deckard, Senator Starr, Mike Salzgiver again. I also had the opportunity to work for a former chair of the Senate Finance Committee in the Congress, and I learned two things about tax credits from that distinguished gentleman. You use them, A, to incent sectors of the economy to stimulate them to get them to do things that are in the public good or that are good for the economy. The other thing you do is you use them to offset the costs that government would otherwise have to pick up so that the private sector picks them up. They're done typically faster, better, a little more efficiently and cheaper. In this case, there's clearly, as John has said, a sector of our economy that is facing some serious trouble, and this tax credit, while some would argue it's not perfect, certainly has a multiple benefit of getting a public good in place, which is to continue to improve the use or to secure the use of engines that are better for the environment. And secondly, you're also stimulating a part of the economy that needs it. So we think it's a good thing.
Mike, on that point, I've heard depicted, and I've heard two different versions of this, that federal law would ensure that these truck engines are going to be bought. And I guess the second point is Senator Morse's point of when I'm in the market to buy these engines, this would do nothing to induce me, and he can speak to this better than I because he's been in that market, this would do nothing to induce me to purchase this credit, would do nothing that would incent my behavior. I would buy it if I need it. I wouldn't buy it if I didn't need it.
Chair Deckard, I'm not a trucker and I'm not a truck business owner, but the folks that I've talked to in that industry have said this is a credit that they will use. And that's, in the end, that's what we're looking for is that result.
Senator Deckard, tonight, Lynn Lunford, OBA again. In that regard, and certainly Senator Morris has huge experience in this. But I think if you got a chance to chat with him individually, that our other business people, and my son actually runs a trucking company, and it's not they just buy an engine when they need it and they don't when they don't. If in fact there's a credit there, that decision will be updated. So it's a speed situation is what it is. Yes, they're not going to buy an engine because they didn't need it. They're not going to take a new engine. But a lot of engines nearing the end of their life, and so they will make that change quicker that way.
But doesn't federal law dictate that they make the change anyhow?
No, not all engines have to. It's for any new engines that are bought. Mm-hmm. But if you have a truck with an engine with a used engine in it, so whether I replace it or not will depend upon my finances, and certainly a credit helps that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Botkin, you are our last.
This is a pleasant visit. We're so used to seeing Mr. Groner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ralph Groner. A shorter version of Ralph. I talked to Ralph last night regarding his transportation package. For anybody who didn't know, Ralph has taken a week of vacation and put me in second chair for an issue I know very little about. But I've gotten pretty direct instructions from Ralph, and you know, for anybody who knows the Botkin Groner team, you know that we actually do take instructions from each other fairly well. The closest I come to the trucking industry is that my son drives one for Oak Harbor Freight, and I buy goods and purchases delivered to many stores. So that's as close as I come, other than I know how important this issue is. And I know how hard Ralph has worked on this issue for the last year and a half, 2 years, since the last session. And, you know, I just have to defend Ralph. Anybody who knows Ralph Groner and would suggest that he ever held a private meeting in the dead of night that nobody knew about doesn't know Ralph very well. You know, nobody does, you know, everybody knows what Ralph is up to all the time. And so, you know, to suggest that somehow he was cutting secret deals that nobody knew about just wasn't listening. This is, you know, this bill provides virtually no jobs for our members. This is not a jobs bill for AFSCME. This is a jobs bill for the private sector. But you know what? The taxes that the private sector pays will be a jobs bill for AFSCME eventually. And I know that this is a critical issue to get passed, both for us as a union, but for other working families in Oregon. You know, Freightliner, if they get to build new engines and sell new engines, those are machinist jobs. And the previous panel's right. Those are very high-paid, very skilled jobs. And heaven knows Freightliner could use a little help right now. So having said that, I just want to add that, you know, my voice to the chorus in Ralph's absence, that this is an important bill. And I want to make it clear for anybody who might think that there is a possibility that AFSCME would change its mind. When Ralph Groner makes a commitment to the Highway Users Alliance that we're on board, we're on board. You know what? There's stuff in this bill we don't like. But we're on board, and we will do everything we can do to help get this bill passed. And we urge the committee to get it done and get it done now before the whole thing falls apart. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a very good testimony to have. Senator Starr, please.
I just appreciate the testimony from everyone this morning. And I just want to recognize that the process that put this package together was a long, lengthy one. It's a difficult one. It was one where there was compromise, where there was give and take, where nobody got what they wanted completely. This isn't a perfect bill in my estimation. If I were to draft it, I wouldn't draft it like this. If it was all up to me, I would guess that virtually everyone around the table would have that same statement. If it was all up to them, they wouldn't. This wasn't how the package would look. But this is the process that brought us here. It's a carefully balanced one. The issue about a $4 million general fund hit, in my estimation, you weigh that against a $2.5 billion investment in Oregon's highways and bridges. It's pretty reasonable. You know, I expect that we'll continue to have a debate and discussion about this. My gut hope is that we can move this bill forward in the form and fashion that it's been negotiated, and hold up the compromises that were made in this package. There are some technical fixes that we can make, and that's one reason why I supported bringing it back to a committee. LFO and others have identified some ways to make a good bill a little bit better, and I'll support those changes. I've had conversations with the Speaker. of the House, and I believe that if we make those technical fixes in the bill, that the House will concur. On the bill, I think it is too important for us not to, to pass, but I would urge this committee and our colleagues on the Senate to recognize the work that a number of members have put into this process. I believe it was a process where it was open to the stakeholders to make comment, to provide input at various points along the way. I want to recognize and thank Senator Metzger again for his partnership and leadership and helping to get this where we are today. And I think that that he's done a tremendous job as well. So with that, I guess I'll...
Thank you. Senator Metzger.
Just briefly, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, a process question. Are we having another hearing, or will we just be having a work session and a future date, or what's your plans on the bill?
We're going to assess where we're at. I've scheduled it again Monday, and Mr. Campbell and Mr. Russell will lead off on Monday, but we're going to assess where we're at with amendments and assess if we have a product that we can bring back to the Senate floor.
Thank you. Just one quick comment, then, Mr. Chair. I won't belabor the comments already made by Senator Starr, but I think it is very, very critical that as we look at the big picture, that we don't lose sight of that. And I think there is a reason, although I have not been here, for those of you who have been here for a long time, this bill is a clearly articulates why we've gone 10 years without a major investment in transportation, because bringing everybody together is essential in order to make something happen. And when you lose that element, you end up losing the big picture. And like Senator Starr, as we had all worked on this bill throughout the House and into the Senate, there certainly are things, as Senator Starr pointed out, I wouldn't write this bill exactly this way either. But in looking at the goal, what are we trying to achieve? The bill meets the goal, and we make compromises. It is a political process. But the idea is, do we meet the intentions and the needs of the state of Oregon's transportation infrastructure? Do we accomplish the goal? And I say we accomplish the goal. So, it's part of, and I think process is, Mr. Chair, very important, and I appreciate your consideration of the process. I know how important that is to you as well. And, I take a little offense, for people to say that they weren't part of a process, because part of the process means you have to insert yourself in the process. You have to come to hearings. You have to go to work groups. You have to respond to have a voice. You can't drag people to a process. It's been very, very open. I appreciate what everybody has done in forging this, and hopefully we can move ahead with this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And thank you, Senator Metzger and Senator Starr, for the work that you've done and the folks in this room. I know this is a hurdle that you did not expect, but I appreciate the effort that was put into this. We're adjourned until Monday at 9:00.